Welcome back to the WCHL 2014 Year in Review. Now, once again, here's Aaron Keck.
Good to have you with us as we count down the top 10 news stories and the top 10 news makers of the year 2014 here in our local community. We're closing in on number one, so let's keep it going with number four. What do you get when you combine 6 inches of snow and ice with one of the biggest rivalries in college sports? Snowmageddon 2014, a monumental February ice storm that will not soon be forgotten. WCHL's Matt Oakes takes a look back.
It's not going to get better, so folks, wherever they're going to be to ride out the storm tonight, they should get there soon and just plan on staying there at this point.
The storm came fast and furious around 1 p.m., and in less than an hour, the streets had turned into a wintry gridlock that had unsuspecting drivers trapped for hours, with cars littering the sides of the roads and accidents clogging up main thoroughfares. Many were forced to abandon their vehicles and take to the streets. But this Wednesday afternoon in February was no ordinary one. The Smith Center was scheduled to play host to the Tobacco Road rivalry.
The conference policy is that if the teams and the officials can get here, we should try and play the game. As of right now, we're a go.
Despite the treacherous conditions, many folks were planning to risk it anyway to get to the game, even if it meant going about it the old-fashioned way.
She said, well, it's not going to stop me. I'm elderly, but I will walk 4 miles to get to that game tonight.
A few hours later, though, at approximately 5 p.m., conference officials and UNC Athletics Director Bubba Cunningham called it off after the charter bus scheduled to bring the Blue Devils over to Chapel Hill was unable to get to Duke's campus to pick up the players. The game was played a week later, with UNC claiming a dramatic victory over its rivals, but it's that 12th of February that will have people talking for years to come. Matt Oakes, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Speaking of storms surrounding UNC basketball, and no, I know what you're thinking, we're not quite there yet. Our number four newsmaker of the year came out of the past this summer and shocked the UNC community. We already knew there'd been academic misconduct, of course, but Rashad McCants named names.
If Roy Williams doesn't step up and take responsibility, you say, well, Roy, how is it that you're not accountable for what your players do off the floor?
That was McCants on ESPN in June, days after he went public with claims that he'd taken fraudulent paper classes at UNC, that tutors had written his papers for him, and that head coach Roy Williams was fully aware of all of it. Big news because Roy's name had never really been implicated in the scandal up to then. Big news also because Rashad McCants was a star player on UNC's 2005 NCAA champion team. But almost as soon as McCants' charges were out there, his credibility began to fall apart. Coach Williams denied his story, as did 16 of his former teammates. McCants himself began making stranger and stranger claims, like saying the NCAA was writing him a $300 million check. Meanwhile, everybody around UNC Athletics was weighing in, and most of the reaction, though not all, was none too impressed with McCants.
Rashad McCants is trying to get his 15 minutes of fame.
Rashad McCants was never considered a particularly solid citizen.
I'm very, very pained that Rashad basically painted a broad brush against our athletics program, and I think he did taint our great brand. I'm also sad that, from his own perspective, that he felt cheated, if indeed that is his truth.
Outside the Lines finds the perspective of one malcontent former athlete who's frustrated with his position in life and wants to blame everybody but himself.
For the storm he caused this summer, Rashad McCants clocks in as our number four newsmaker of the year. But enough about Rashad McCants. Let's focus on something more sophisticated. Let's have some mature dialogue, some real, serious, intellectual public discourse about the important issues of the day. And we'll get to that. But first, we've got to talk about this Senate race.
If Tom Tillis understood where I'm coming from, he wouldn't make it harder for me to go to college.
Senator Hagan is a rubber stamp for President Obama.
He claimed he was surprised by his roommate's affair, but then rewarded both aides with taxpayer-paid bonuses.
While ISIS grew, Obama kept waiting, and Kay Hagan kept quiet.
Instead of listening to North Carolina, Hagan continues to push for Obamacare.
I'm Kay Hagan, and I approve this message.
That is $100 million worth of political advertising in support of, or more accurately in opposition to, Tom Tillis and Kay Hagan, the two competitors who come in together at number 3 on our list of the top newsmakers of 2014. It was the most expensive Senate race in the country, but it was Tillis who won on election night, unseating Hagan by about 45,000 votes, part of a national sweep by Republicans who picked up 9 seats in the U.S. Senate to retake the majority.
You weren't just standing with me, though. You were standing with working families.
We need to free the American people up to make it an economic superpower, a military superpower, and an energy superpower. These are the things that we're going to go to Washington and do.
Tom Tillis and Kay Hagan together, our number 3 newsmakers of the year. For our number 3 news story of 2014, we turn back to Chapel Hill and tragedy. The community was shocked and saddened in July by the senseless beating death of 59-year-old UNC pharmacy professor Feng Liu as he took his normal afternoon stroll just a few blocks from work.
Orange County 911.
Hey, my name's Dan. There's an individual laying on the street. He's kind of laying to the side, breathing hard.
Liu was still breathing when help arrived after his attack on July 23rd, but he died at UNC hospitals the next day. Two men, 23-year-old Derek Davis of Durham and 27-year-old Troy Arrington of Chapel Hill, were arrested and charged with first-degree murder. They had allegedly killed Liu for his wallet. The shocking incident devastated Liu's friends, family, and colleagues, as well as the entire Carolina community. A week after Liu's death, hundreds gathered just a few blocks from the murder scene for an emotional vigil. They remembered Liu as a devoted husband, father, soon-to-be grandfather, loyal friend, and brilliant scientist.
We should not be here today. Something is wrong with our community.
In December, Orange County DA Jim Woodall announced that if Arrington and Davis are convicted, he will not seek the death penalty. That's our number 3 news story of the year 2014. Coming in at number 2 is a story that weaves through so much of our year in Orange County, encompassing a highly contested election, tense court battles across the state, and finally a dramatic and historic mid-October morning in Hillsborough at the office of the Orange County Register of Deeds. Our number 2 news story of the year, the fight to legalize same-sex marriage in North Carolina.
Denying a couple the right to marry just because they're of the same sex is a violation of a fundamental right protected by the United States Constitution, and full citizenship demands that every couple have an opportunity to exercise that right.
That's Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt there describing a legal doctrine that would have been considered radical 20 years ago, that was merely an argument 20 months ago, but is now the official legal doctrine of the land. It all happened faster than anyone expected. When 2014 began, Amendment 1 was still on the books, a provision in the state constitution expressly banning same-sex couples from getting married. There were many who argued that Amendment 1 violated the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause, but it didn't look like it was going away anytime soon. So in March, former Carrboro Mayor Mark Chilton, running for Register of Deeds, announced that if elected, he'd sign same-sex marriage licenses with or without Amendment 1.
I'm not going to enforce any provision in North Carolina law that's clearly contrary to the federal constitution. I'm going to sign these things until Orange County Superior Court or somebody like that tells me not to.
Chilton won his race in May, narrowly defeating incumbent Deborah Brooks, largely on the strength of the same-sex marriage issue. But Chilton didn't take office until December. And this time, history was faster.
I mean, I was shocked, but then seconds later, just overjoyed.
That was Kleinschmidt on Monday, October 6th, after the U.S. Supreme Court elected not to hear arguments in Bostick v. Schaefer, a case in which the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Virginia's same-sex marriage ban. It opened the door for judges here to strike down our ban, and 4 days later in Asheville, that's exactly what happened.
This does more than just get rid of Amendment 1. This slides us in a whole other universe of freedoms and civil liberties.
On Monday, October 13th, Lydia LaBelle and Alicia Stemper became the first same-sex couple in Orange County to receive a marriage license, ironically from Deborah Brooks, still the sitting Register of Deeds.
We further make oath that there is no legal impediment to such marriage.
The issue's not quite over yet. Another circuit court has since upheld a same-sex marriage ban, so the Supreme Court probably will weigh in on the matter next year. But here in North Carolina, the change has already come.
Now here we are, and liberty rules, so does love. Here we go.
Same-sex marriage in North Carolina, our number 2 news story of the year. Now we head back to UNC, and we'll pretty much be staying there for the rest of the hour. Checking in at number two on our list of the top newsmakers of the year, UNC Chancellor Carol Folt, whose second year in Chapel Hill was defined mostly by controversy and the way she handled it. WCHL's Danny Hooley looks back.
Folt's year started off on a jarring note. On January 1st, she was cited for driving 76 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour speed zone near the Haw River. That was nothing compared to the wild ride that followed for Folt and the university. But by the end of 2014, she was able to take at least one sweet victory lap. By late January, she was publicly refuting the research methods of former athletics tutor Mary Willingham. By late April, Willingham had announced she was leaving UNC, but the media didn't stop asking questions about sham classes that had been taught in the former African and African American Studies program. This time, Folt really had a mess to clean up.
I am deeply disappointed in the duration and the extent of the wrongdoing.
She apologized to the UNC community with assurances that corrective and disciplinary measures were in progress. Folt's current challenge is to diplomatically defend UNC centers that could come under the budget knife from that Board of Governors.
One of the best ways you do that in certain areas, you raise money for a center, not an office. The Stone Center is a vehicle for raising funds.
One highlight of Folt's year, perhaps the biggest one, is when the Eshelman School of Pharmacy at UNC received a $100 million gift on December 3rd from its namesake, pharmaceutical executive Fred Eshelman. Governor McCrory shared the stage with Folt and others for the announcement in front of the media.
I have never seen a salesman like Chancellor Folt.
Danny Hooley, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
We are almost there. When we come back, we'll unveil our number one newsmaker and our number one news story of 2014. Get your guesses ready. That's on the way next on the WCHL 2014 Year in Review.